This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day. As we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information, presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here. We cover lots of different topics in the Umpqua Valley. And, of course, now we're getting awfully close to Labor Day weekend when things start to really kick in for the political races, not just locally, but around the state, the region, and the nation as well. So we're going to talk about one of those races today with one of the candidates, Republican Monique Despain, running for Congress. Thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Kyle. It's always good to be here.
So kind of give me an overall view of how your campaign's been going this summer.
We are full steam ahead. We have 74 days to Election Day, not that I'm counting. And I'm just out meeting voters, engaging every day, still raising money so that we can show up on those TV ads and counter the lying ads that Val Boyle likes to run. So I'm dialing for dollars and knocking on doors every day of the week and just, you know, everybody is ready for change regardless of party affiliation. So I'm feeling really good about it, and I'm ready to take our congressional seat back so that we can start getting some common sense leadership on the issues in our district.
What are the bigger issues that you really kind of wrap your campaign around?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a few. They're all, you know, very important. But the homeless, addicted, and mentally ill, that we just need to be doing something different. We are draining our community services, our law enforcement, our medical care system, housing. It's all suffering because of the lack of leadership and solutions around that issue. And then, of course, forest management and wildfire management, the suppression, the maintaining our preventing the fires and putting them out quickly. We know how to do it. We just don't have leadership and the policymakers with the will to solve that problem. So that's another major issue. And of course, affordability, you know, all of those two things I just mentioned are drains on our community. The money doesn't go to maintaining a thriving economy, thriving communities. And so when government starts delivering some common sense solutions and getting out of the way of a prosperous economy, we're going to see some real results so that people can afford to live in Oregon again.
So let's kind of go through those. You mentioned the homeless. Obviously, that's a big issue pretty much everywhere. Now, I had heard that you had were at a homeless roundtable in Eugene recently. How did that go? What'd you learn from it?
We hosted, my campaign hosted a Safe Communities, Safe Neighborhoods Roundtable at the Veterans Building on Veterans Memorial Building that's on Willamette in Eugene. It was great. I brought together people I've been talking to for years that are real stakeholders in the effort to resolve and bring services and help to the people that are living in the streets. I brought these stakeholders together, not because I believe I have all the answers, but because I believe they have those answers. And so I wanted the public to hear from them. We had the sheriff of Lane County, the deflection program administrator, Clint Riley. We had the Eugene Missions executive director. We had several nonprofits, the leadership of several nonprofits that provide medical care, feeding, housing, and we had a Veterans Legacy representative there, Dan Ballman, because it is a priority for me personally to make sure we do not have homeless, addicted, and mentally ill veterans rattling around in our streets. We have, just in Lane County, we have approximately 300 of those. And then Douglas County, of course, struggles with this problem as well.
What about the aspect when it comes to housing, trying to figure out what to do for the homeless, the whole aspect of how you handle the issue of sobriety, whether that mm-hmm. is alcohol or other substances?
But it's kind of the crux of the problem for many people. Now, there are a number of homeless people that are not addicted and they're not mentally ill. I mean, we have a terrible economy right now and people are really struggling just to stay in housing. But there's a large portion of the homeless and addicted. We see it with our own eyes, the homeless. They're addicted, they're mentally ill, and they are not getting the medical care that they need. Now, there's a big debate around this housing first model that was an Obama administration model that is an epic failure. The record is replete with data. San Francisco areas that have struggled with this, we have the data. The housing first model has become the housing only model, and I just reject it. I think that subsidized housing has to come with some strings attached. Now, I do not believe it's an absolute prerequisite to be sober at the moment that you get assistance. That would be ridiculous, and I do not support that. Some people living on the street need immediate shelter, safety, an opportunity to detox and access treatment. I mean, before they're even capable of considering sobriety, they just need to be in a safe, protected place. So I support the programs that do that, but I do not support a blank check where subsidized housing just comes with no conditions attached. You know, it's one thing if you're buying your own home and paying your own way and you're living with the choices that you make, that you're taking care of yourself. But when taxpayers foot the bill, it is unreasonable that there should be no strings attached. You know, the taxpayer needs to be protected from exploitation as well.
You know, I've run into a couple of situations recently out around the community and ended up observing folks that are employed, at least on a part-time level, that are working and still find themselves homeless. Ended up kind of stumbling into that a couple of times, and I'm not sure everybody realizes that sometimes is still the case.
There are people working full-time at minimum wage that are living in their cars, and that is unacceptable in the United States of America. But we have tons of money. We have hundreds of millions of federal tax dollars coming in to just Lane County and to Douglas County. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but we don't have a lack of money. It is a lack of prioritizing. So there is a really legitimate housing crisis, and government needs to get out of the way. We've talked about this before, just to, you know, build a home, a $300,000, $400,000 house. Developers are having to spend $100,000 and getting through the administrative red tape to even be able to put the first dollar into actual construction. And I'm running against Val Hoyle, who votes against everything that would eliminate the administrative burden put on developers and builders and people who want to buy homes. So we do need to address that. We do have a shortage in housing.
Now, you mentioned the whole issue of forest management, wildfires, et cetera. This week, in fact, we had an interview in the past couple of days about the Forest Service making possible changes in the roadless rule, and I'm sure you've heard about that as well. What are your thoughts?
Yes, I filed a public statement on that when they were accepting statements, and I support repealing the roadless rule. I've talked to enough experts who've been firefighters for decades. Just like with the homeless, I taught the agency serving the homeless. You got to talk to the people who know what they're doing, and they are experts, and they've been doing it for decades. They cannot access the forest to manage them and to put out fires, and it's a real it's unsafe. And I support repealing that rule. My opponent Val Hoyle is adamantly against it. She won't say that, but she keeps saying that she doesn't support it, which means she doesn't want to change it. But she also just keeps asking for an extension to think about it. And this is what career politicians do. They just keep thinking about it and talking about it and putting it off and putting it off. Meanwhile, our forests and all the creatures in them and all the economic opportunity of our forests is burning. So we need to, I think that that rule needs to be repealed, and any other common sense solution that helps us save our forests and our communities should be promptly addressed.
We've got record amount of fires in Oregon this year in terms of acreage, and while the Umpqua Valley has not really had much of an issue with that, you've got the smoke, the aftermath, and all the destruction that goes with it. It seems like we're seeing a bit of a shift and seeing more interest in active forest management really coming from both sides of the aisle.
Well, finally, thank goodness. Yes, it's high time. There are some positive changes at the federal level. Not every proposal is perfect, but we need to come to the table and have discussions and have people who understand what they're talking about talk about it instead of fighting and putting on their party jersey and digging in their heels. That's what we've got now. So the Democrats of Oregon have had decades, 40 years, to be talking about this, and that's what they've been doing. They've been talking about it, but now's the time to stop these fires. And so I'm actually going to have another round table, because our round table on safe neighborhoods was so successful on this very issue. And it'll be September 10th. I'm going to bring together loggers, firefighters, and all the different co-stewards that have been fighting to have this issue heard by our political representatives. And so that'll be another opportunity for the public to hear from these experts and how I plan to continue to bring them together and propose solutions and then get to work on implementing those solutions.
So where will that be at?
That's going to be at the same place. You know, that Veterans Building is just such a great location, great space, and affordable to my campaign. So that's at the Veterans Building on Willamette on September 10th.
Now, you mentioned as well, as we got started, about the issue of the economy, the cost of living, a big issue for people. It's not easy to solve that. If you were elected to Congress, though, what would you advocate for that you think would help with the situation?
Well, it isn't easy to solve, you know. I mean, anything worth doing is usually not easy, but I'm going to support all the policies. I'll propose policies that cut the permitting costs, remove the red tape that blocks new construction. I would have voted for the SPEED Act that Val Hoyle voted against. I would not have supported Oregon decoupling the federal and state tax codes. I would have stood up and fought for our businesses so that they could still enjoy the bonus depreciation and encourage them to invest in equipment and upscaling and upgrading their businesses to remain competitive. You know, getting government out of the way. Also, anything I can do to deliver policies that are no longer soft on crime, that stick up for victims and keep criminals off the street. So you have a distinct choice, all of you voters out there, in November on the ballot. We need to get government out of the way and let the businesses and employees of Oregon step into their full potential.
Now, you mentioned voting, which reminds me that recently it seems like the amount of people actually voting, at least in some parts of Oregon, has been dropping. People look now at the November election that should pick up more interest with the midterms, et cetera. But what do you say to people who, from whatever perspective, have just kind of went, nah, I'm not going to bother to vote because it doesn't make a difference?
Honest to God, Kyle, the biggest threat to our success in Oregon to delivering new leadership is that the voters just sit out and do not vote. You know, it's so critical to participate. And, you know, I am taking all the risk. I am working every day now. This is like 3 years of introducing myself to the 4th District and my team and my volunteers and my donors. All the voters need to do is make sure they're registered, make sure their address is correct, and then when they get that ballot, don't let it sit on the counter. Cast your vote. And if you don't do that, you've really relinquished your right to complain and express frustration about what's happening in Oregon and in Congress. Now, in 2024, my campaign won 68% of the vote. And so I'm just honored by that. But only 72% of the voters actually voted. If everybody turns out, all across the district. But even Douglas County could have diminished some of the higher turnout in places like Benton County, where they're not so ready for common sense change. But we could minimize their impact by everybody in Douglas County and across the 4th District voting.
How do you feel like your campaign is looking going into November?
Well, I'll tell you, this time in 2024, our opponent had a significant cash on hand advantage. We've completely eliminated this. This fight has just taken a little longer. We're going to finish it up in November. We've outraised the opponent, and that's pretty remarkable, hit national news. And that is because so many Oregonians have pitched in. And I, you know, we still need to keep raising money. So if everybody pitched in, whatever you can, on my website, MoniqueForCongress.com, we just keep funding the advertising, which is intended to reach voters and inspire voters to vote. Look, it's understandable that people have become apathetic about voting. Sometimes we don't even have a challenger. I mean, if you remember, nobody was running against Val Voile last October when I filed. We are worth it. We can do this, and we all have to step up and cast that vote. As soon as those ballots drop, election day is November 3rd, we'll get our ballots about three weeks before that. No matter how concerned you are about election integrity, just cast that vote, please.
Now, with your background in the military, that's well known, I'm sure this issue of the Roseburg Veterans Home is one that you've been tracking. We've talked about it before. It's been slow movement, even though it's a project that really was originally proposed about 15 years ago, and here we still are waiting.
Just like those other topics we just talked about, it's talk, 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 and empty promises. I will be there at the town hall in Roseburg on August 27th. Again, this is an opportunity for people to get engaged. This is more work than voting, but you could come to this on the 27th, 6 p.m., at the OSU Annex Conference Room. So anyway, I will be there. I'm sure I will just be in awe of how nothing has happened. We haven't even broken ground since the discussions began, I think, in 2010. When I'm elected, I will be the only veteran in our congressional delegation. Merkley, Wyden, Val Voile, they haven't done anything to deliver. In fact, the last thing I saw was a lame letter in 2025, just telling the Honorable Douglas Collins how important veterans are, as if he doesn't know that, right? Why hasn't there been action since 2010? I will get those answers. I will tell you where the bottlenecks are. I'm talking to people about that now, and it's just kind of amazing that nobody knows where it's stuck. One thing that stands out to me is that apparently the state has allocated $35 million. Well, when I was working for Kevin Mannix back at the Oregon legislature, it really stands out to me. The state of Oregon gave $30 million to provide free legal advice, free lawyers to illegal immigrants. $30 million, boom, no discussion. But if anyone even makes a move to try to take away the $35 million that the Oregon legislature is committed to this budget, you will hear from me on that. I think we just don't have representation that is loud and clear with a backbone and will deliver answers and results. That's what I am to do for our veterans.
How important do you think it is to have somebody with your kind of military background, not just representing this district, but overall being one of the voices in the U.S. Congress?
Well, I don't know why these career politicians don't deliver results. You know, I don't really think it's fair to say you can't love and protect veterans if you're not a veteran. But I know that I am a veteran. I've worked with veterans. I've supported them for over 30 years, and I'm not going to stop doing that. So I have a track record of proof. I don't know why you have to understand. I mean, it's part of our education system, I guess. I think a lot of people don't understand what veterans have delivered so that we can be free people in America. So that's a tough question. I mean, it's like when I see these soft on crime laws that the Oregon legislature passes, Val Voile and Tina Kotek, do they have to have a loved one murdered to understand that we need to protect victims? So I don't know. It's a great question, but why bother answering it? We just need to elect people who do care.
Talk about your thoughts on the national scene right now. We've got this protracted war going on, which is really seems to be impacting a lot of things. What do you think the best course of action there is?
Swift. I would abandon negotiating with terrorists. And I think that the writing's on the wall, and we need to just be swift and step into our full military potential. Just remember, all the listeners, the last five presidents have all said, many of them just in their campaigns, but I mean, it's on the record that we cannot have a regime, the Islamic regime that hates on America, has killed Americans, has made it perfectly clear they will continue to do it. And as one of my best lifelong Iranian friends told me, you cannot be for women's rights and be against taking out this Islamic regime in Iran.
As we wrap up here, about a minute and a half left, where are you headed in terms of appearances in the next few days?
So I'll be at that veterans home event in Roseburg. So that's the big thing. I was in Florence last Monday, met with a band of brothers. And learned a lot about, you know, just reaffirming many of the issues. This home, the veterans home, came up, and the fact that it's very difficult for veterans to get transportation, to get to their medical care. These are all things that we will easily address when I'm your congressional rep. We had a great event at the Winchester Bay Salmon Harbor Fishing Derby. My next trip will be to Roseburg. Otherwise, I'm out and about door knocking in Springfield and certain parts of Eugene.
And if people want to find out more about your campaign, where do they go to look?
MoniqueForCongress.com. And social media links are all there. You can follow along this journey. We're talking about all these things that we just mentioned. Thanks for having me, Kyle.
All right, Monique Despain, Republican candidate for Congress on Inside Douglas County, 1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This has been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. It's presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.